Good day. This is Mary Hodson filling in for you this morning, reading the Vermilion News from Danville. The Vermilion County Board this week had a first reading on a new solar farm energy systems ordinance for the county. County Board Chairman Larry Bond said he's been working on this since he became chairman about 9 months ago. He worked with the Illinois Farm Bureau and its law team, in addition to the Vermilion County Farm Bureau and county board members. They also looked at solar ordinances from six other counties to see what would be the best fit for Vermilion County. The public can view the proposed ordinance on the county's website at www.vercounty.org or see a copy in person at the county board offices in the Vermilion County Administration Building at 201 North Vermilion Street. With the county not having zoning regulations, Bond said they thought there should be commercial requirements so companies wouldn't have free rein. There will remain no requirements for residents, such as putting solar panels on a home. They can do what they want, Bond said about county residents. The recent Illinois Solar Energy Tax Credit Lottery saw four proposed projects in Vermilion County, including in Georgetown, which has its own solar ordinance. Bond said about solar versus wind energy projects, he sees the solar projects as being not as disruptive, with farmers able to farm around it a little easier and removal also easier too. Requirements for the solar farm energy systems include a building permit, the start of construction on a site within 2 years of application approval by the county board, height not exceeding 18 feet at maximum tilt of the solar panels, lot will be more than 5 acres in size, the front, side, and rear yard setbacks are a minimum of 10 feet from the property lines, which form the outside perimeter of the project area, and also 100 feet from a residential structure, a locked fence to enclose the SFES of at least 6 feet tall, but no greater than 8 feet. If lighting is provided, it should be shielded and downcast such as the light does not spill onto the adjacent parcel. Noise levels measured at the property line shall comply with standards set by the Illinois Pollution Control Board and may be enforced by the state and county. The SFES shall prevent glare toward inhabited buildings on adjacent properties and highways, and placement of the generator or noise-producing electrical equipment shall be placed at the center of the project to the extent practical, and all wiring between solar panels and the solar farm facility substation shall be underground whenever possible. There are also outdoor storage proof of an agriculture impact mitigation agreement, building codes, vegetation and ground cover, and weed control, drainage, high voltage warning signs if needed, an annual review and reporting requirements, and a decommissioning plan must be submitted. The application process also has a fee and requirements. The City of Danville in August 2018 put in place solar energy regulations for the city. The solar panel regulations allow for small ground mounted or roof mounted systems. Solar panels, if roof mounted, do not have zoning district restrictions. The solar arrays could go on property zoned industrial or also zoned agriculture with a special use permit. The Illinois legislature passed the Future Energy Jobs Act with incentives and tax credits, which went into effect in 2017. The new law allows for the installation of solar panels such as on properties for a community solar project where people can subscribe to a share of a larger solar farm. Behind the meter projects are when a business or organization can install solar that directly powers their business or building. Extra energy produced by their solar array is credited to them through net metering. Community solar projects open up access to homeowners, business, and organizations that can install solar on their roof or property. They can participate in a nearby community solar project and be credited for the energy produced by their share of the solar installation. A good location for a community solar project, as some companies have discussed, 10 to 15 acres of land, flat land, or south-facing slopes preferred. Less than 8% slopes required and no shading from nearby trees or structures. Not in a wetland or floodplain close to three-phase electrical lines and or a substation owned by Ameren or ComEd, and no better use for the land for the next 30 years. In other business this week, the county board established civil, criminal, and traffic assessment fees charged by the circuit clerk and approved a $7,000 feasibility study about making safety improvement to County Highway 14. That is 7 miles on Attica Road from the east edge of Rossville to the Indiana state line. And preparing the application for Highway Safety Improvement Program funding. Bond says semi-tractor trailers have had some problems with the turn there and guardrails have been hit. County Engineer Adrian Greenwell's salary also was increased by 3%. The county entered into an agreement from July 2018 to July 24 with the Illinois Department of Transportation for transfer of federal surface transportation program funds to pay for half of the county engineer's salary. The county board approved appropriating $115,669 in motor fuel tax funds for Greenwell's salary from June 16, 2019 to June 15, 2020, and authorizing IDOT to transfer $57,834.50 of the Federal Surface Transportation Program funds allocated to Vermilion County to IDOT in return for an equal amount of state funds. The county board also appropriated $29,900 from the county's MFT funds for paying the county engineer's expenses in the next year. Bond also said he's not heard anything about Collins Tower, and he said about 52 county vehicles, mostly sheriff's squad cars, were damaged in the recent hailstorm. Coming up next week at the county board property meeting committee meeting is a discussion on having a county renaming policy. Bond said the county doesn't have a policy, even going back to the renaming of the county courthouse in honor of Illinois Supreme Court Justice Rita Garman 2 years ago. There's been recent discussion, too, about renaming the administration building, which was once a post office and federal courthouse, after Speaker of the House Joseph G. Cannon. Next article is entitled All in One by Carol Rome. Danville District 118 officials hope the district's 3-day centralized registration event, which ends at noon today, made registering students more convenient, particularly for families who have more than one child in the district. District 118 registration continues today from 8 a.m. to noon at the David S. Palmer Arena. This year, pre-kindergarten, which is housed at Southwest and Edison Elementary Schools, and Northeast Elementary Magnet School are included in the registration blitz. Parking is available around the Civic Center and the parking lot west of the Civic Center to the north in the city parking garage and to the east at Town Center. District officials ask that no one parks in the old National Bank parking lot because cars will be towed. Parents should have received a packet of registration forms in the mail the week of May 10 that they should fill out ahead of time at home. Receipt of the packet will serve as proof of a student's residency. Parents should bring the forms to the registration event where representatives from each school will be set up to accept the forms. The Dr. David Fields Administration Center closed Wednesday and will remain closed through today so that every district employee can help in the registration blitz. Many employees were on hand Wednesday morning wearing yellow Ask Me buttons and directing parents along a path of maroon arrows on the floor. Once past the check-in at the front doors, parents followed arrows to a room where they could receive help proving residency if their family is brand new to the district, or if they have a child entering the district for the first time. The arrows also guided parents and their children to the health room where the nurse practitioner Steve Skimhorn was giving physical exams to children Wednesday morning. "We did 19 physicals yesterday and 8 so far today," he said. "The kids needed to enter school, but they also work as their sports physicals." As Skimhorn weighed and measured the height of brothers Ronald Miller and Davion Jones and then took their blood pressure, the boy's mother, Renal, stood by and watched, and she said she was thankful for the ability to have her son's physical exams done on the spot so she could register them for school. Their doctor's appointment wasn't until after August 20, she said, acknowledging that the first day of school was the week before. I like being able to get it all done in one day. The Maroon Arrows then guided parents past pre-kindergarten registration, which was a new addition to this year's event, and many of the 26 community organizations that were set up to provide information about their services and summer opportunities for students. The Arrows eventually led to the lower level of the arena, where each school had a registration table set up to accommodate the families of the children enrolled in their school. Northridge Middle School rocked a totally awesome 80s theme registration table like last year, while Southwest Elementary School's registration table was very colorful with its blooming awesome theme, and Garfield Elementary School's table conjured up thoughts of the high seas with a pirate theme, complete with pirate hats and a treasure chest. Danville High School principal Kimberly Norton, dressed in DHS maroon, commented about how smoothly the registration had been running. "We talked to families with multiple children, and they've been able to get through in about 10 minutes," she said. Demetrius and Elizabeth Hampton stopped at Edison Elementary School's table. Demetrius said the couple has 6 children. "This is much easier," he said of the one-stop registration. "That would have been hectic traveling around town to the different schools." Parents said they appreciate the centralized registration event and the effort the staff at each school put into it. "It's all in one spot," Elizabeth Hampton said. Angel Taylor said, "I like it better than going to all of the schools." Next story, Danville man faces 7 child pornography charges. David Crawley, 61, of Danville, charged Thursday in Vermilion County Circuit Court with 6 counts of reproduction of child pornography, which are Class X felonies punishable by 6 to 30 years in prison, and 1 count of possession of child pornography, a Class 2 felony punishable by 3 to 7 years in prison, according to Attorney General Kwame Raoul. Crawley's bond was set at $1 million, and his arraignment is scheduled for July 9, according to release from Raoul's office. Raoul's investigators, with the assistance of the Danville Police Department and the Vermilion County State Attorney Office, conducted a search Wednesday of a residence in the 900 block of Sunset Ridge. Crawley was arrested after evidence of alleged child pornography was discovered, according to the release. Crawley is a Taekwondo instructor, and officials are encouraging residents who might have additional information to submit a tip to the Vermilion County Crime Stoppers online or by calling 217-446-TIPS, which is 8477. The case will be prosecuted by Raoul's office with Vermilion County State's Attorney Jacqueline M. Lacey's office. Predators that traffic in child pornography will be held accountable for their criminal acts in Vermilion County, Lacey said in the release. "We appreciate the support of the Attorney General's Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, which helps us protect Danville families from online predators," Danville Police Commander Joshua Webb said in the release. "There is no place in our communities for individuals who victimize children and their families by downloading or sharing these horrendous images," Raoul said. "I am committed to partnering with local law enforcement agencies through the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force to identify and protect the public from these offenders. The arrest is part of the Attorney General's office work to investigate and prosecute child pornographers in Illinois." Raoul's office, with a grant from the U.S. Department of Justice, runs the Illinois Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force that investigates child exploitation crimes and trains law enforcement agencies. Since 2006, the Attorney General's ICAC Task Force has been involved in more than 1,600 arrests of sexual predators. The task force has also provided internet safety training and education to more than 921,000 parents, teachers, and students, and more than 25,000 law enforcement professionals. Next, we have community briefs From Danville, the library lists events. Enjoy family-friendly activities, vendors, and live entertainment by George Schulenker, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at the Farmers Market on the library lawn. The Danville Public Library's Builders Club meets at 10:30 a.m. Saturday in the Children's Program Room to build creations with Legos. For children age 5 to 7, children under 8 with a caregiver. The DPL Writers Group brings together writers of all levels 10 a.m. to noon Saturday in the second floor conference room for adults age 18 and over. Gregory's Academy of the Arts will present the 2019 Comedy Hour, which features three comedy skits from the Carol Burnett Show at 1:30 p.m. Saturday in the Danville Public Library's first floor meeting room. And from Hoopston. Hoopston American Legion Post 384 will retire flags at 1 p.m. today at the Legion parking lot, 502 East Penn Street. The program will feature the burning of worn American flags and the Legion Color Guard and firing squad. Westville, it is showtime at your library, June 17 to 21 at the Westville Public Library. Children in grades K to 2 can attend at 10 a.m. The children in third grade and up will be at 1:30 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. Stop by the library at 223 South State or call 267-3170 to register. There will be puppets, game shows, and other fun themes for each day. The Vermilion County Conservation District will present a program at 10 a.m. Monday for children of all ages. Next, we have some obituaries. Francis Newton, 88, of Fort Worth, Texas, passed away June 11th, 2019. Maiden name Edgington. She was born in Danville, 1930. Graduated from Henning High School and received a BA of Arts from the University of Northwestern St. Paul. She married Ray Newton in 1955. Her visitation is 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Saturday, June 15, at Guardian Memorial Chapel in Fort Worth, Texas. Services will follow 12:30 p.m. and burial will be Monday at Dallas-Fort Worth National Cemetery, 2000 Mountain Creek Parkway in Texas. Nicena K. Chaukas, 58, of Lafayette, Indiana. She passed away at home June 4th at 2019. She was born to James and Janice Chaukas of Perrysville, Indiana. Graduated in 1978 from Danville High School and then 1988 with high honors from Lakeview School of Radiology. And after school, she moved to Lafayette. A memorial will be held at 4 p.m. Eastern June 22nd at Christian Union Church in Covington, Indiana, with Tony DeMoss officiating, and should be laid to rest at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Donations can be made to the Christian Union Church or Ronald McDonald House in Indianapolis. Doris Jean Kincaid, 81. She passed away Tuesday, May 21st at 2019 at Pleasant Meadows Senior Living in Christmas. She's the daughter of James Calvin and Ethel Eileen Wynn Greer, born September 21, 1937, in Louisville, Kentucky. Her husband preceded her in death. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, June 17, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermilion Street. Officiating will be Pastor James Blue. Burial will be in the Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorial visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Per Doris' wishes, cremation rites have been accorded. Memorial donations can be made to the Alzheimer's Association. Michael Ray Keller, Seidel, passed away Wednesday, June 12th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. He was born in Danville to Earl Ray and Florence Pierman Keller and married Diana Lynn Ford in 1987. She survives as well as a son. Funeral services are 10 a.m. Monday at Robinson Chapel in Catlin. Reverend Tim Pierman will officiate burial in Woodlawn Cemetery in Indianola. Visitation is from 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday at Robison Chapel. Memorials to the Vermilion County Humane Society in care of Robison Chapel at P.O. Box 79, Catlin, Illinois, 61817. Barbara Eva Gerard. She's born in Cayuga, Indiana, former resident of Clearwater, Florida, currently from Cummings, Georgia. Died on June 8, 2019. Born to Chauncey and Lula Hack in 1929. She graduated from high school in Cayuga and became a teacher in the Indiana State Teachers College. Married Paul Gerard in 1947. A memorial service to celebrate her life will be held Thursday at Ingram Funeral Home in Cumming, Georgia. That was Thursday, June 13th. Maxine Musgrove, 84, of Danville, passed away at 6:44 a.m. Thursday, June 13th. She was born in Powers, Michigan, daughter of Walter and Alice O'Neill. She married the love of her life, Bobby C. Musgrove, and they spent 51 years together. Surviving her are her daughter, Barbara Musgrove of Danville, sons Bill of Danville and Robert of Danville, as well as grandchildren. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, June 17, at Holy Family Catholic Church, 444 East Main Street in Danville. Entombment will be in Resurrection Cemetery in Danville. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday, June 16, with a rosary service at 3:30 p.m. at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to the Alzheimer's Association or the Activities Department at Hawthorne Inn. Thomas Duckworth, known as Tom, 53, of Chicago and Danville, passed away June 8th. He was born in Danville on November 30, 1965, to Charlie and Barbara Hutcherson Duckworth. Graduated from Champaign Central High, where he lettered in football, and then joined the U.S. Air Force, later moved to Chicago. He leaves to cherish his memory as father, Charlie Duckworth of Danville, and a brother, Chucky Shepherd of Danville, two sisters, Terry Machum of Springfield and Peggy Duckworth of Naperville, as well as a host of nieces, nephews, relatives, and friends. A homecoming celebration will commence at noon Saturday, June 15th at New Jerusalem Church, 1033 North Walnut Street, Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. till the time of service. Officiating will be Pastor Bobby Keyes, Sr. Interment will be at 11 a.m. Monday, June 17th at the Danville National Cemetery. Barbara Mae Black, 90, of Danville. Died Saturday, May 25th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, June 15th at Kruger Cohn Pape Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville, with services following at 11 a.m. Pastor Ramey Gordon will officiate. Following services, Barbara will be laid to rest in Davis Cemetery in Fairmount beside her husband, Richard Black, who preceded her in death in 2008. She's survived by her four children, Linda Morrison Black of North Carolina, Mark Black of Danville, and Todd Black of Champaign, and Leslie Black of West Jefferson, North Carolina. Karen Chastain. A private graveside service was held 2:30 p.m. June 11th in Frankfort, Indiana for Karen K. Chastain, who passed away November 2, 2017 in Orange Park, Florida. She was born in Danville to Clarence Brandy and Janet Nance Jenkins, raised by her aunt and uncle Therese and Laverne Penny Jenkins, attended Westville High and later moved to Frankfort, Indiana, and she is survived by her children. Next, we have an editorial. Midwest Voices: Raises for public officials should be done the right way. Everyone deserves a raise for the work they do, yes, even our state legislators. It's technically a part-time job, although a base salary of $67,836 is arguably a decent salary by most people's standards for full-time employment. Many legislators get even more than that when you add up the stipend they receive for various leadership roles. And then each lawmaker is entitled to $111 per diem for every session day, plus mileage reimbursements. Although some, like Representative Tim Butler, Republican of Springfield, don't accept per diem. That's not to say it isn't earned. Lawmakers, the good ones, work hard. They're heavily involved in districts and they listen to constituents. They attend committee meetings, read thousands of pages of bills and studies, and vote in what they believe to be the best interests of those they represent. Sometimes valid threats to their safety are made by those who disagree with them. The General Assembly hasn't received a raise since 2008. That is poised to change July 1, when a 2.4% annual cost of living adjustment is set to go into effect. That'll be about $1,600 more each year per lawmaker. Few of us would be happy to go 11 years without a raise, so we don't object to that. It's the way it was done that bothers us. Cost of living increases for legislators are automatic unless a law is passed to block it. For the past decade, the General Assembly has done that as the state grappled with numerous financial issues. But this year, the House slipped the raise into the budget legislation, which was introduced about noon Friday and voted on throughout the weekend by the two chambers. We agree with Senator Dale Ryder, the Mattoon Republican who pointed out the missing cost of living increase freeze to Democrats in his chamber. If we think we deserve one, then stand up and say it, he said. Don't try to slip it through in the last hours of session because that's what people resent. He's right. If the Republicans hadn't pointed it out, and all 19 in the Senate reportedly voted against the budget because of the pay raise, who knows when the public would have been made aware of the raise? It's not like anyone had a lot of time to parse the 1,581-page budget bill that was introduced on the last scheduled day of the legislative session. Senate Democrats tried to block the cost of living increase through other legislation, but the House didn't take action on it. On Tuesday, Governor Pritzker said he planned to sign the nearly $40 billion budget as is. Those raises are as good as done. As we noted last November, when the Springfield City Council approved small raises for aldermen and other elected officials, a reasonable pay raise is fair for those who work for the betterment of the people they represent. The same holds true for members of the General Assembly. Unlike the House, though, City Council did the right thing and did the right way publicly, so Springfield residents were aware of it and had plenty of time to comment on it. House leaders should be ashamed of the lack of transparency they displayed in getting these raises approved. And that's from the State General Register in Springfield on June 5th. Next article is about Assembly of God minister who received an Unsung Hero Award. This was Anita Livengood, 83 of Danville, accepted the award at the Illinois District Council of the Assemblies of God annual session in May in Naperville. Livengood, who attends the district and regional meetings, said she was surprised that she learned about the award and one or two credentialed ministers who have served with little acclaim from the world are honored each year. She and her husband, H.B., were pastors at the Assembly of God Church in Hoopston from 1955 to 68, and they also pastored churches in Illinois, including Atlanta, Robinson, and Clinton. She served as a counselor at youth camps for 30 years and was also involved in the March for Jesus in Danville from 1998 to 2003. After her husband died in 1990, Livengood served as pastor at other area churches, and she was ordained a credentialed minister in 96. She was pastor at the Assembly of God Church in Newton from April 91 to 1997. She returned to Danville in 1997 and was pastor at the United Church at Tilton from 2001 to 2006 and interim from 2011 to January 2013. She was interim pastor in Robinson from 2014 to 16, and she also does office work in Danville for her son Michael, president of Mike Livengood Ministries. Another son, Stephen of Waterloo, also is an ordained minister with the Assemblies of God. She's a Gold Star mother in honor of her son Kevin, a Green Beret who died in a helicopter explosion in 1989. Thank you. This has been Mary reading from the Vermilion paper. Thank you.